How does this look?
It looks good. We are here to party sports. Back at it again with your host, Hunt the Sheriff, and our co-host for today, Elite 15, High Rock Stockholm man and track runner, joins us live, Anas, Mr. Zoo.
Yo, brother.
Pronounce the last name.
We can't hear you, dude. Your headphones aren't connected.
What are you talking?
That's right. Fastest student history, and can't even connect his headphones. It's all good. You're muted, brother.
There you go.
Say something.
Hello. It's the phone. Okay.
No. He just got to say something.
Is Zoo muted? Come on, we've done this before. He's muted.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. We can have a conversation without him. You just kind of sit here and enjoy our time. I don't know what to tell you, dude. I don't know what to tell you. Did we hear him when he was originally in this thing?
Yes. Yeah. Before we went live, do whatever you did before we went live.
Now you've got kind of a thing. Do you know why High Rock's start list does not show Anas and Hunter as the doubles team? I don't know. They're probably not officially registered.
Okay,
they're
working.
You're there.
It was working right before.
Yeah, you're talking now, dude. You're there. You're there. This is big. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Hey, this is a question out of left field. Did you ever follow Flow Track? Do you remember that was a thing?
Oh yeah, all the time. They have Kick of the Week every week. I was so excited about that.
So gangster, what happened to that?
They try to make it. Now you have to pay to watch everything. So I think everybody kind of left.
Yeah. So that's what we're kind of trying to do. What's that?
They still follow the sports pretty closely.
Yeah. I mean, they were doing real. They had Flow Wrestling. They had Flow Track. They had like a couple cool things that I was really interested in. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with Here to Party Sports, is we're trying to have these people that cover all these aspects of our sport. I don't want us to be all High Rocks. Like right now, just because High Rocks is buzzing, it's easy to talk about. But I'm going to get bored of it pretty quick. Like I go on my phone late night and I'll just be scrolling through and watching these guys, like these high school guys at the track and field events, just crushing it. Like it's,
you remember Workout Wednesday?
Yeah, dude. It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, I just sit there and like foam with the mouth. I was like, this is cool. And I don't know, like right now, if our sport has enough coverage to get that stuff. But man, the kids are getting so fast these days. I'm obsessed with it. Like, do you think right now at your age, if you dropped into like an elite level high school program, that you could hang with the workouts?
The training changed, so yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I wish I knew what they know now, and I didn't run in a carbon plate era. I ran right before,
and that's. Well, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I have so many questions, and we're putting the cart before the horse here. Like obviously, anybody who doesn't know about you, I'm going to try to give this thing kind of like a true paved road here. Right now, you are in the Elite 15, but that's probably your lowest level accomplishment. You are an insanely talented runner. And one of the biggest things that you're known for, I'll never forget, I showed up at a High Rocks and someone's like, yo, this dude Anas here is a sub-4-minute miler. And I was like, what? Like, watch out from him. There's a sub-4-minute miler running here? I was like, that dude's going to die. I was like, no one who runs a sub-4-minute mile can show up and do a High Rocks. Their legs are the size of my fingers. And then you and I raced in individuals 2 years ago, and you came out just like a freaking cannon. You came out like a cannon, and I was like, oh, God, this is going to be really bad. And both of us, and I ended up dropping out of the race, which I usually do at that race. And you and I have raced against each other 2 years in a row there, and each time you've let out harder than ever, and you let out hard in Stockholm also. But – I mean, I want to give everyone as much information there is to know about you because you have a fascinating back story. Let me know if I get this right. You're Moroccan, but you're raised in France.
Yes. Born and raised in France.
Okay. But you have Moroccan descent or family.
Yes. See, that's the first thing that kind of surprised me in the U.S. If you're born and raised in the U.S., you feel super American, right?
Yeah.
For us, it's kind of different. You're born and raised in France, but you still claim to be what your parents are. But also, don't forget, the minute I step into the household, this was Morocco. Yeah. We will go to Morocco probably 2 or 3 months a year.
Really?
Yeah.
So you guys had real ties to it, though. You weren't from
Morocco. Yeah, we'll leave, we'll leave in June and come back in September, literally. Every June we'll leave and come back in September.
Just to give you context, like here in the United States, like I'm not Scottish. I'm not from Scotland.
No. It took me a long time to understand that.
Yeah.
I used to be offended. I used to be, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Texas. You know, I'm Texas.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. Like we're still like super hardcore. We represent like where our family's from. So it's, you know, it's some old
stuff. Look, when I decided to run Hyrox, I didn't know what country to represent because I had the option to do both. I have both passport and I can literally do both, France or Morocco. First of all, I'm super proud to represent Morocco. And second of all, they don't have any African in the elite 15.
Yep.
So that would make sense for, you know, higher purposes in the future or marketing wise or whatever.
That's cool. So are you Parisian technically?
Yes, like, right outside of Paris.
Okay.
Right outside. Yeah.
So, I mean, just so people can understand, like, when I was growing up, it's very designed. Like you run in middle school and high school, and then you're trying to get a scholarship. And then, you know, hopefully you get into a D1 school, you get a scholarship. And then if you're an absolute mutant, you get out of there and you're all of a sudden like an elite level runner. From what I can tell, it just seems like everybody who's a great runner from Africa just like all of a sudden sets like a world record at the age of 14 and is literally like a pro by 19. What was it like developing as an athlete over there in Europe? Like now that you're also sponsoring a lot of these kids and you're managing a lot of them, like what was the development chain like for kids over in Europe and Africa versus here, what you saw in the United States?
It's two different worlds.
Yeah.
Here, what you guys have in college, you basically already have it in high school and middle school. Not to that extent, but it's already conference, regionals, and there is flow track following the high school guys and this kind of stuff. In France, first of all, we don't have the concept of student athletes. We don't have that. And most European kids or African kids don't have that at all. So you go to school like a normal student from probably 8 to 4:35.
Yeah.
And then you just go to the local track club at the end of the day and just do track. If you happen to be really good, you join the national team and start competing in the summer in, you know, European Championship, World Junior Championship, stuff like that. Maybe World Cross Country around March, February.
Yeah.
But that's only two guys per year. We do have a lot of letters from American universities. And I remember in freshman and sophomore year of high school, I was getting a lot of recruiting letters, but I had absolutely no clue what the NCAA was. So yeah. I denied literally everything. And that was the best schools in the nation. Fast forward 3 years, now that I was not as good as I was in high school, I considered going to the US. Of course, I reached out to the same schools that reached out to me when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, but that was not the same discussion anymore.
Just to give some people some context, like, were you guys 5K athletes in high school? Like, what was your distance?
The mandatory distance is cross country, basically.
5K?
No, 8K in high school. 6 to 8K in high school.
Yeah.
Before that is 5K. Yeah. And then under 15, it's 3K.
So what was your, like, give us some times there. Like, what was your times?
Okay, my best times, everybody always talk about my sub 4 mile.
But we're talking like about middle school or college here. What's your time?
Okay, so middle school. So at 14 years old, I ran the year 13, 14 years old. I ran 2:34 1K.
Ouch.
I ran 5:33 2Ks. And I think that 5:33 2Ks to this day is still the second fastest behind only one person. Guess who?
I don't know.
Jacob.
What's that? Jakob Itzkenbritzen?
Yeah, only him. He ran faster than me. And that same year, 8:50 3K. So that's middle school.
8:50 3K?
Yes.
That's gross.
Yeah, no, I was super, super skinny at the time. Super skinny.
So was that a big play? I was like, did you get lazy or did you just hit puberty?
No. When I turned 16, that summer, I was doing a lot of push-ups, pull-ups, and dips, and I just wanted to get big. Yeah. So when I came back at 16 years old, and so now in high school, okay, high school in France is 3 years.
Yeah.
So you don't think I'm getting my timeline wrong. When I got there, I was a monster in cross country. I won literally everything, nationals, and I won nationals cross country 3 times, but easily. In the summer, I was still run pretty seriously. I got to 8:30, 3K, my junior year of high school. So for here, it would be like what, a 9:05 2 mile?
Yeah.
Yeah, 9:05 2 miles, the equivalent. And then I started doing the 1500.
I just want you to know that I was only 42 seconds off you in the 2 mile. So watch the fuck out.
Look, I was telling you, I really think if you took track seriously, you will have been a top level athlete. There's no reason you're running the way you're running now at your weight, and you don't have the talent required to run with the best guys. There's no way. No way.
We just didn't have anybody giving us guidance. We didn't know any better. It was usually like someone's parents or someone's uncle who like didn't want to sit at the bar and drink beer. It was like, it's probably healthy for me to spend time with these kids for both of our sakes.
You got the guy doing community service at your
basically, dude. Like our system.
He was a sign.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's just like, this was my next question. Like, do you think that the systems over where you were raised versus the systems here in the United States were better? Like, do you think you would have been a better runner here in the States?
No. I became my own coach very early on. Huh? My brother was – I had a coach. I mean, not a coach. A track club we used to go to two, 3 times a week.
Your brother's a beast too.
Yeah. He stopped for 8 years, and he came back stronger than ever. You guys should check him out on his Instagram and everything. He's a monster. He does ultra races now. So he's the one that started track, and he was winning literally everything. But he started coaching me. I was probably, 15, 16? We were just trying stuff out. And by the time I was in senior year of high school, I was doing my own training plans. So that's part of the reason why I got slow after, because I started thinking the harder is better. No, it doesn't work like that. I mean, when I say slow, I was still running 3:46, 3:45, 1500 meters. But all the guys that I was beating, now they start to run 3:39, 3:38, getting to the Olympics and stuff like that.
When you say harder is better, you're thinking, okay, in order to get faster, I just have to keep running faster. And
I just made the mistake of watching. I was watching too many documentaries about Kenya and those other guys and all this stuff. I don't believe in now. I used to go hard every day, sometimes twice a day. Wow. And when I'm telling you I was going hard, man, I've done some crazy, crazy, crazy sessions. They used to call me the world champion of training in training camp and stuff like that. The day of the race, it would be nothing.
Yeah, you got to learn those hard lessons. Like you and I trained hard on Monday, and I've been I went really easy on Tuesday. I went hard yesterday, and I'm gonna be lazy as all hell for the next 2 days before we race. And
isn't that the worst thing, to just do nothing and wait for the, like, it doesn't drive you crazy?
No, I'm gonna move, but I'm not gonna charge. Like, you and I really went to war on Monday. Like, we were like, up on the treadmill, up on the treadmill, you know.
And I was trying to be careful. Oh no, he's gonna come through the door before me.
So. Yeah, yeah. It was a good session. It was good. So
no, I hate track meet days, track meet weeks, or high rocks weeks, because I don't do much.
Yeah,
I love when I'm training hard. Those big cycles. That's what I like.
I'm really good at training high amounts of volume, and when I come off, I don't really have very much issues with it because I walk a lot. Walking has been my greatest thing. And if you're not one of those people that can handle it, but I'm from New York City where walking is just like part of the life. I don't mind going out for like hour or 2 hour long walks. And that's fine. Like, that makes me feel good. It's not intense. It gets me moving. Like, that's why I tell all my clients, I'm like, hey, just walk this week. Just take these 2 days and just walk. And they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, trust me, just chill out. So let's just get some things, because I'm sure people are going to geek out about this. back in the day, like college days, when you were running, in Kentucky.
Yeah, Eastern Kentucky first, and then Cal State Northridge.
Okay, so like, let's give me like a 5K time. I know you were an 8K athlete, but just so people can have some understandings, I think everybody appreciates the 5K. What would be a 5K time for you in college?
14:30. I did only that twice. I ran twice. Type K was 14:30, but it was an hour after the 1500 meters each time.
Yeah.
Honestly, okay. I was a 1340, 1350 guy, not faster than that. Once I started running the mile at 1500, I lost a lot of aerobic capacity. I wasn't doing a smart, I was going too fast. So I lost every single aerobic capacity I had.
Did you ever do anything like, 10Ks, half marathons, or did you leave all that stuff alone?
30, 10K, first year out of high school.
30-30?
Yes.
Shit.
The 14:30, I also ran it in high school. I ran 14:30 in high school.
Wow.
But at the time I was a pure cross country runner. So that's why I was still able to run super fast on longer distances.
Wow. That was a bitch. What about like a half marathon or a marathon? Do you ever do anything like that?
No, I never did. I think at my best I would have run 1:03.
What do you think? Like, okay, let's put a line in the sand now. Look, where you're at right now, what do you think your 1500 meter time would be right now?
Oh, I would love to know. I think, okay, let's start from the 10K, because 10K and 5K, my training is targeted more towards this, so I know what I can do.
Yep.
I know I can run 31:40, 31:30 for the 10K in a very fast race. Worst case scenario, 32. 5K, I did one in September 16 flat. I wasn't trained yet. But I think now probably between 14:50 and 15:15, depending on the day. And the 15, I don't know, man, because I went to a track, for example, Friday, and it seemed that fast twitch muscle that I had back then didn't leave at all.
Yeah.
I can still do 400 meter repeats and close the last one in like 55, 56. So I'm always surprised when I can do that.
You just got to beat into your legs. Yeah, I will aim for a 32, low 32 for my 10K this year.
Oh, we've been trusted. But there's a problem. You got to find a fast race. Might as well do it on the track. Yeah, yeah. They have the big 10K races at UCLA every year around April.
Let's go, baby.
I'm down.
You want to see the ball pony split the pavement, dude? Let's go. Come on. You don't want to see this. There's just a pack and I just run through them. There's just bodies flying everywhere.
Plus, those are college kids mostly, so they will just.
They want that heat, dude. You kidding me, dude? They get to feel these big spikes.
I just see a big guy. They will not understand. If you pass them, mentally, they will break.
That's what I like, baby. That's what I like. So tell me. What were some of your favorite workouts that really made you a beast? I know they call you the world champion of training. What would be like a workout? You're like, man, if I do 8 weeks of this workout, I'm going to dust the field.
Again, at the time, I didn't know how to train. So even threshold, aerobic, everything was all out. Yeah. So I have very bad memories of pain from back then. But my favorite one is saying in the fall, leading up to a big season, hills were a big, big part of my program.
Hill training, sprints or distance?
Sprints. I mean, we'll start with, for example, 5x400 meters, literally all out, and try to work on the lactic capacity. In the hills, it's really hard to maintain it in the form.
And when you're saying hills, are we talking about 5% pitch, 10% pitch, 15% pitch?
Okay, you see Pepperdine, Pepperdine sign in Malibu, hill, the big road, like that. So I don't really know, but something you can still, I was still able to manage 106, 107, 400 meter uphill. So that was...
Diesel weasel.
Again, I was super light. I was not like now, which is a major, major, major difference.
Yeah. That's why I keep on telling people, I'm like, dude, I got to lose weight. I'm a chubby bitch, but wait until you see me lose that weight. And you guys are all in trouble.
No chubby bear.
I witnessed it. I saw you on the scale. So he is what he actually. You're heavier than you claim.
Yeah, I'm heavy. Sorry, I try to fudge the facts a little bit. If I tell people I'm 200, they're like, "Oh no!" Then I get on the scale, and the scale's like, "Mercy, sir, you're breaking me. I'm a fat bitch."
But good workouts that can give you a good idea on your mile time.
Yeah,
3x800 recovery, 2 minutes. Your average is about your mile time if you don't do nothing stupid. That one I did sub 2 several times. But my best workout ever, 500, 1500, 1K, 800, 600, 400, 200. And the pace was just insane. It was 110 for the 500, the 1500, 350, the 1K, 227, 800, 157, 600, 127, and the 453. But guess what? A week after that, I ran a 15-minute 5K.
That's good. So, like, knowing what you know now about yourself, like, you know, what you did back then versus now, like, obviously you told me you ended up leaving college track, getting into boxing and getting strong again. Now you're getting back into the sport of high rocks. Like, what are some of the things you think are the most biggest missing pieces in people's running programs?
A scientific approach.
Yeah.
Definitely. But now, you see, for example, when I started recruiting college kids back then, 2017, compared to last year, it looks like two different sports. Everybody know how to train now.
Yeah.
Everybody read the training
college about recruiter?
Yes. I will get into this. I will get into this.
Yeah, it's all part of the notes.
Yeah, everybody know how to train now. So a random person, I think you really got to tell them from the beginning that there is different things you got to put in place before running seriously. I go to the gym a lot and I see people just sprinting on a treadmill almost every day. But I mean, I don't think it works. I don't think it works. And I'm the best witness on my own self that training hard, not only you don't improve, you don't plateau, you get worse. So I say, teach them how to run slow. It's boring, but you got to do it. And volume.
Yeah. It's an ugly bitch. You know, just to get into the exciting parts of like your life, because people are training geeks, like what are some of your favorite lifts? Like I've seen you pulling 5 plates off the ground. Like you're clearly very strong. What do you like to do now that you transitioned out of being a runner? Like, do you like bodybuilding? Do you like powerlifting? What are some of your lifts? Tell me like you can deadlift 500.
I like power building. We call that power building. So
yeah.
Right after I stopped track, I literally stopped on a Saturday. The Sunday I was in the gym. So many years of frustration, wanted to lift every single thing in the gym, but I couldn't. And that's because I watched Pumping Iron when I was still a runner. Yeah. And man, I wanted to lift some weights for a long time. The minute I had the opportunity to, oh, I went crazy. I probably gained about 40 pounds in that 6 months period. At first, I didn't know what I was doing, but I got into powerlifting gyms and I learned how to deadlift, bench, and squat, which is what I like to do. Deadlift, bench, squat. My best deadlift is 560.
Damn.
That's 20. My
that
bench
COVID strength, baby. That COVID strength.
Exactly. my bench is not really good. I have, how many pounds is that? 2 plates and a 35.
Bench, so, 2 plates and a 35. That's really good. That's 305.
Yeah, almost. I think it was almost 300.
Yeah.
But my bench has never been that good. And my squat is 450. One rep.
Nuts.
Right to the ground. When I got into high rocks at first, the first time you saw me, I was still doing heavy stuff. I was running on the side, but now I kind of stopped. And I kind of wait next week because I'm definitely going back to gaining some weight.
Yeah, you want to hit some weights. Are you the kind of guy, like you and I were talking, Like, do you do supplements or anything? Like, you said you used to be the kind of guy who did everything, and now you just kind of gave up on that. Like, tell us a little bit about your routine there, like in the kitchen, like any supplements or any meals that you were kind of really critical on.
Well, back then, yeah, I was taking iron and magnesium and all the vitamin B complex and citrulline, and it was too many stuff, man. It was just, it became an obsession. If I don't have it, oh, I cannot perform. But it's true. If you don't have it, you cannot perform. When I got into bodybuilding and boxing, I was just taking my protein shakers and I was trying to be as healthy as possible, you know, juicing and ginger and all this kind of stuff. But when I started training really serious about for High Rocks this past 5 months, I will say, I realized, no, this is not enough. You gotta have your carbs. You gotta have your protein afterwards. I'm not the most serious about it. But I gotta say something and be honest. When I came to your house, you gave me the BCA product with some taurine inside of it.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of guy, if you give me something like that, I just sip on it all the time, right? So I get done with my product super quick. So I took it Monday night. I wanted to recover from the workout. I took it Tuesday. I took about 3 scoops. And then I hit the workout Tuesday night, and I called you, ask you what's in it, because I felt really strong from the warm up. I knew something was different. My legs were fully recovered.
Yeah.
So yesterday, man, you cannot imagine how many I took. And today I'm not, like, it's right here. I already finished it at 7 a.m.
Yeah, this is what I start every single day.
So I know it's important. But I also love the concept behind not taking anything. But every time I do that, I end up having a deficiency in something and I'm not performing to my max level. I hate taking stuff. But if I want to take High Rocks serious, I have to put a routine together and take everything at the right time. Otherwise, yeah. it's not possible.
You don't want to become a slave to the things that you take in your life. Like, you don't want to be a slave to the fact, like, you forget your Garmin watch. You're like, oh no, I can't go running now. Yeah. You're like, oh, I don't have my carbon plated shoes. I can't do this workout. Oh no, I didn't have my pre-workout. I'm not going to have good times. Like,
a heart rate monitor.
Oh, it's windy. Yeah. My workout isn't going to be good. I cannot do it.
Yeah.
I was that guy, man. If I don't have my spikes. Oh, I don't have pacemaker in training today. Yeah. And it become not fun. Meanwhile, now it's the total opposite. I just do it.
I think I'm really lucky for the sense that I grew up and I have like crippling ADHD. It's very hard for me to keep anything consistent in my life. And over time, I became more consistent. But I would show up to track practice and I would have not my running shoes. So I would have to run in my skateboard sneakers. And I would... Like, one time I showed up to the West Point 10K and I was drinking the whole night before and I had a pair of sneakers and I didn't have any shorts. So I ran in sweatpants and I won the whole 10K. Like, I've shown up with so little so often and just continue to do well that I'm no longer afraid of having nothing. Like, I skied in the hardest cross country ski race in the entire world, in Greenland, in a cotton hoodie and shitty little cotton mitts and regular ski pants when everybody else was in full, like, perfect Arctic kit. And I've just been in the worst places you could possibly be and gotten results that most people could never get with all the tools. And as long as you can have that mindset that you are not breakable by things that are outside of you, you're fine. But I do think, as the reason why I've become so obsessed with it, and you have admitted, if you can get all of them in alignment with each other and be consistent, it does increase the performance for sure. You know, it's one of these kind of things where I will tell anybody, I'm like, create a plan, do your best to follow it. And if it gets something fucks up, who gives a crap? Just keep moving.
Yeah, but also, if you want to get into supplements and you don't know no better, it's very hard to understand because those brands have too many stuff. And you have no idea what works, what don't work. There is no, the only brand out there that's famous and that does a great job to me is Morton. It's clear. Yeah. You take the gel at this time, and you're gonna have the results. And the results are amazing. Crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. The, what we're trying to do with our business is we have what's called the tier one supplements, tier two supplements, and tier three. Like, we've set up tier one. It's a hydration product, it's a pre-strength product, and it's a pre-workout product. Like, every athlete should be taking these things. And we explain it very clearly. Like, if you're, you should be drinking water all the time, and water isn't enough, because clearly you're just losing more than just water when you're sweating. And we try to make sure that we make it very easy, like one scoop in a 24-ounce bottle for every hour of training. Simple formula. Our pre-strength, like, if you're going to be going in the gym lifting weights, you want to have every option to be able to move more weights or move more reps every single time you go back in there. Creatine, citrulline, as good as it gets. And our pre-workout, we don't want a stimulant where your head blows off. We want that clean flow-based energy where you don't ever feel like you're dipping in the middle of the workout. It should always just feel a little bit above your normal. If it's way above your normal, that's a stimulant. And that is going to have what's called a crash. The pendulum does swing back. And I know it is very complicated. When I first got into supplements and I was like a younger guy, I took every supplement under the sun because I couldn't figure out what to take. And I probably was going backwards with the things that I was doing. But I appreciate what you're saying. You know, you didn't really touch on food. Like, is there anything that you have that's kind of a staple for you that you're just like, man, I love my Cheerios. I love drinking beer at night. You're like, I don't touch meat. Like, is there anything you're about?
Okay, that's fun. Part of the reason why I stopped track and field, honest answer, I couldn't stand no more watching my diet. Really? I've always been told that I was super heavy. And I was always probably 10 to 15 pounds heavier than any other guys in the field. Always been. But I wasn't trying to. I wasn't lifting the weights. It's just the way my body is. So I would starve myself. Literally starve myself. For years and years and years. And eventually I got down to 169. That's the lowest I've got in my career. So now, no, man, I enjoy whatever I want to eat, I eat. Also, my wife, she cook every day, and she can cook. So whatever she makes, I eat. But we have some staples. Of course, in the morning, we try to have protein, oatmeal. I know everybody now is a new trend to say oatmeal is not good, but he worked for me.
I hate that. Those guys are so such bums.
Egg, oatmeal in the morning, lunch, whatever I have time to eat, I eat. But my dinner are big. I eat a lot of dinner. The thing that I would just destroy if I see it is Nutella.
Nice, nice.
Oh, I would eat the whole thing with a spoon.
Have you had that cookie butter stuff?
No.
Oh, my God. I'll bring some for you this Saturday, dude.
Man, I'm telling you, I eat the whole jar with a spoon.
Go to Trader Joe's. I'm sure they have one around where you're at. And in the peanut butter area, there's this bar, this little bottle that says cookie butter. And it's these Biscoff cookies, the ones you get like on planes and stuff, like the really delicious ones. It's technically the batter for these cookies. And you spread it on toast or anything after a training session. You're just like, oh, I could die and go to heaven. There's nothing quite like it.
Why toast? Just go straight.
Oh, dude, trust me. I'm telling you, I'm the kind of creep that has like a half dirty spoon just on the counter at all times because I'll just go in and dive in. But yeah, I do it on toast after I'm done training. It's crack.
The one thing about nutrition though, on the double threshold days, I do those. I've started doing these August.
Yeah.
Seriously, consistently every week, twice a week. I've done double threshold days. And that's why my running got way better this year. Those days I eat whatever I can eat. I just eat sugar, Coca-Cola, everything you can imagine, drink, eat. I just go for it because those days I usually, my Garmin tells me about 5,500 calories throughout the day.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. I mean, it's very difficult to eat that much clean food.
So I've been doing
any McDonald's for you.
Yeah, come on. Let's talk about Mickey D's.
McDonald's guy.
We know you all like Starbucks. We already had that conversation.
No, I mean, not anymore. Not McDonald's, but I do fast food a lot, man. Again, I don't have no restriction.
What do you got against McDonald's, bro?
McDonald's, no. I don't like McDonald's.
Dude, double quarter pounder with cheese, 20 you shoot McNugget, McFlurry?
I don't like the fries.
We don't talk about fries here. We only do double quarter pounders with cheese. I judge a country based off of their McDonald's. So I'll go around the world. The best double quarter pounder with cheese comes out of Geneva, Switzerland.
Well, you'll be very, very disappointed in France then this summer.
A Royale with cheese?
I don't know. That's why I don't like McDonald's. It's never been tasty to me in France. Never.
Listen, we both got to qualify for Nice. Well, I got there. You got to qualify now. So, you know. Are you going to be like one of these other guys? Everybody, after I hang out with them, they're like, dude, let's train together. I'm like, perfect. Let's go. We set it up. And then everybody disappears. Like, we went to Stockholm. I had all these guys say, I'm coming out for training camp. They disappear.
You're not going to put this on me. I have the same issue. Somebody come and train with me once and disappear too.
We've got about 10, 12 weeks until DC. Mm-hmm. We go the same day every single week and we show up and we fight.
No, I agree on the track because it's very hard. I was thinking about you last time. I was, how do you get down the mountain at night?
Me?
Yeah.
Take my pistols out and just start shooting, riding down. I'm a crazy person out here on these hills, dude. I love it. Yeah. I have some stories I'll tell you off air about driving up and down this mountain at nighttime that will blow your mind. Tell us a little bit about your professional career with Trackhouse. I was looking around getting some information off of it, and as I understand it,
I try to put as the least amount of information possible out there.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, I'm a little bit confused by this. Either you don't really have a company and you're a drug dealer, or you've just got a different way of handling business than most, because the world these days is all about just like shameless promotion. You had six pictures on your Instagram from what I could see.
I removed most of them.
So from what I understand, you manage track and field athletes.
So how I started 2017, I started charging athletes from overseas to get them to the process of joining an NCAA school. Okay. At first, I was just targeting a mid-level athlete that just want to have experience in the US.
Yeah.
And keep doing their studies or whatever. Of course, I'm very competitive. So I start recruiting better and better and better athletes. The best athletes in the world don't have the money to pay a recruiting service. So I couldn't charge them. So for about 6 months, I was not charging nobody. Starting to have crazy good results and guys that started winning NCAA and stuff like that. And in sports, other than basketball and football, you are allowed to charge a recruiting service fee to NCAA schools. Excuse me, in sports, other than football, you cannot charge NCAA schools for a recruiting service fee. That was the rule until 2018. So when I came in this game, I found a way and I worked closely with the NCAA to allow the schools to pay a recruiting service fee to people like me to scout athletes all over the world and get them to the US and to the NCAA and give them the opportunity to just succeed.
Well, it seems to be entirely fair because if you look at some of the data on these athletes, the amount of income and attention and donations that it brings to school by having a very dominant athletic program, it's massive. So,
yeah, and at first like I didn't understand it.
Yeah, you're bringing a massive service to these people. You're bringing a ton of value to them.
At first, I didn't understand it. The day I realized that schools and coaches were making bonuses based on performance of the athlete that I was bringing, I was like, okay, now we have a problem. I need to get paid. So simultaneously, at the same time, I was taking my agent license to represent the athletes, because the one that I brought to the US, the best one, were making it to the professional level, top 5, top 10 in the world. So really contender for Olympic medals. So I wanted to have my agent license to basically do a 360, bring them to the US, develop them, get them back when they turn professional, sign their contract with the brands. Of course, it's not as easy as you might think, because people are usually either agents that do the whole branding and management thing, or they have a recruiting service. Now, what I'm going to say is going to explain to you why I don't really put myself out there too much. Before the whole NIL rule, it was not allowed or not. Basically, it was a rule that you cannot have a contract professionally or represent somebody professionally and at the same time be involved in the NCAA and scouting, everything like this. It wasn't a written rule, but everybody obeyed by it. So I couldn't say, I couldn't say, oh, I'm sending this guy and I'm getting it back after college. No, you cannot do that. Now, we are allowed to do it because we have the whole NIL rule and I can do marketing. I can do management, but I can do marketing for them. Also, at the time, I was communicating a lot on the fact that I was bringing athletes to the US, and I would post literally every other day the new recruit. And I guess other recruiting service fees start paying attention, and they realize that somebody must be paying me. And that's how they found out that you can charge schools. So now, guess what? Everybody's starting to charge schools.
Do you mind? Listen, I don't know if this is reaching too far, but like, what's a typical recruiting fee for a decent level athlete?
Okay, so you cannot recruit. You cannot charge per athlete. The NCAA would not allow that.
And okay, so what do you do? Is it like just an upfront fee?
You charge the school a recruiting service fee for the year. The recruiting service fee allows the schools to access a list of athletes with all the demography, contact information, everything about the athletes. Basically, you do the whole scouting work for them.
And okay, give me an example of like a top level recruiting school. What's like
The highest people charge is about $15,000 a year per school.
Yeah.
But of course, schools don't have enough scholarship to get 10 athletes. So you typically send probably 2, 3, sometimes 1. Depends. But again, if you charge this kind of money, you better come to
one weapon, though. It's a game changer.
Oh, every time I send somebody. I have guys that won NCAA back-to-back 3 times in a row.
That guy was your long jumper?
The triple jumper. Actually, have success at triple jumpers for 4 years straight. Every year, I had a triple jumper from my company win. But I just
Where's he from?
He's from Italy. He's Nigerian, but he grew up in Italy. So he represents Team Italy.
He's a beast.
Fifth in the Olympics the same year.
Yeah.
By the way, this guy is a freak of nature. During COVID, he was just by my house, didn't train at all. When I'm saying didn't train at all, I'm talking about zero training. Burger King, breakfast, lunch, dinner, because you know you have the 2 for $5 burgers.
Yeah.
When in college, you don't really have money, so that's all he was eating. Body fat, I think like 6%. He got to University of Oregon in February or January. We made him transfer because here, they were not training during COVID. The track was closed.
Yeah.
So he transferred there. Within a month, he went NCAA. When I saw him, because I was the kind of guy that believed everybody was on drugs. Okay? With him, when I saw that, because he was with me every day. I'm like, okay, some guys in the world are freaks of nature. So I started believing again in performance. But yeah, that's how it works. So now I work with schools. I'm unfortunately not allowed to pick who I work with. If somebody reach out to me and want to work with me, I have to say yes, but I don't trust every school. Some schools, if you're a distance runner and you go there, where you have 99.9% chance to just not be successful.
Yeah, that sucks.
Well, I pick the schools. I have a lot of distance runners in my beginnings, but with time now, I just recruit every single event.
Is the way that they have these contracts set up is you get one fee for getting them there and the school pays you for that, and then based upon their performance you could potentially have payouts later in the years of their career? Just all up front getting them there?
You charge them a recruiting service fee for the year and they pay for it and you do your job and that's it. Now, with the whole NIL thing, I'm also allowed during their college career or post-college career to have them on marketing rights and get them deals right and left. And the crazy part now is that brands are investing more or almost more money to college deals than pro deals. Bassem got a thing. He doesn't have a contract.
Do you think this is good? Because that was one of my questions. Like, part of me thinks that the rawness of being in college athletics and wanting to get to the next level is going to drive these guys to like really, really, because college should basically be like a 4-year long training camp to see if you got the guts to go pro. My worry is now with these people, and like, you know, they deserve to get paid. I can't imagine if I was a super stud athlete and getting paid $500,000 to $1 million+ a year. Like, I would have been a monster. I'm lucky they didn't give money out back then. But I'm wondering if these guys are actually going to help accelerate their performances, or if it's going to potentially deter them from becoming more successful because they're getting paid too young.
No.
You don't think so? Look,
the main issue as agent and in these sports until NIL came was guys will run crazy fast in college. They will sign a deal. The best one probably signed 200 to 50,000 a year, sometimes 300. And man, it's crazy. The transition from college to pro, I would say at least 50% of them just completely disappear.
Why?
It's still a question mark for me to this day. How come they ran so fast in college, but the minute they turn professional, they have money, they have all the time in the world to train, they just completely disappear. So now the brands, the same things, the same bet they were making with the athletes on the transition from college to pro, they can do it while they're in college. And if you're already not performing, well, by the end of college, your contract is over.
So you get your chances now.
Yes.
Get paid.
You get exposed earlier if you're a fraud.
Yeah, I get that. I appreciate that.
I don't want to get in details of what I really think is going on, because I just can't, but
let's keep it professional.
You can't speak on it.
I usually probably say too much.
I look, man, it's sports. It's high level sports. And I think those stuff are everywhere. That's all I can say.
So,
it's good for everybody.
Tell us about your transition into Hyrox, like how you found it, what you think about it, how your training changed. Because I saw you for the first time 2 years ago, 2022.
Yes.
Show up to LA Hyrox.
Yeah. I was, during COVID, all I was doing is lifting weights. But a lot of my athletes that I represent were in LA.
Yeah.
So I will go and train with them, the one that are running. I will train with them, run, and little by little, I enjoy running again. And then it was a Decafit event on April 1st, 2022. And I just showed up. And when I competed, I realized how much I miss competing. And I enjoyed the sports of the compromise running and all this kind of stuff. So it was good. I won the second heat. And I think I got second overall, something like that. Cole Schwartz won that day.
Old daddy.
Yeah.
Old daddy.
And then after that, my friend told me, all the guys there told me about Hyrox. Mm-hmm. So I kind of looked into it and I started training for it. I thought I was training for it, but you know, I was doing all the wrong stuff. And I showed up in Pasadena and man, I couldn't push or pull the sled at all. Mind you, I was a way stronger guy than now. And then I just kind of let it go for about 6 months. Didn't do nothing really. And I really trained my first Hyrox that I really took serious was Dallas last year. That's the first one I really took serious. The one before, don't even.
What'd you score?
1 hour, 1 minute, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. 1 hour, 1 minute. Then I did LA. That was just coming off the month of Ramadan. Muslim, you know, we fast for a month. So I was cooked. I was completely cooked. And then Chicago, I would say, was my first one. I really got a real training camp and I really trained. And I did everything right.
I mean, like looking at the sport, like you come from a very high background.
Oh, probably. That's so much stuff to say.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, you come from a background where you've seen the very top end of track and field. How do you feel about the growth of this kind of hybrid stuff? Like, how do you feel about the athletes? How do you feel about the sports? Like, how do you feel about it from like a professional standpoint? You like making deals and seeing where the talent's going, where the cash is going.
Part of the reason why I'm training and investing so much time into it now is because I do think this is the future. If I knew this would not take me nowhere, potentially financially, the next 5 years, I would not be investing myself that much. I would just stick to staying in shape. Clearly, there's a demand for it. Every single person that I successfully drag into the sports become an addict. And I think on the long term, it might replace or be the same level as marathons. I wouldn't even mention CrossFit or stuff like that because it's two different things. I think it's more a marathon potential than CrossFit.
Yeah.
Where you have different races. The only thing that I think is missing right now, if you look at every single major sports, they have a youth component to it. So you take your kid to football, basketball, soccer, and Hard Rock needs to get there. It needs to be youth sports. Not only it will raise the level to, can you imagine if...
You thinking that they need to do like a youth division? They have,
division, you know, I think, but also,
like 16 and 18. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe even younger than that.
A lower.
Imagine if somebody starts Hard Rock at 16. Imagine by the time they turn 25, like how fast would they be running in 10 years?
Yeah.
49s, 48?
I don't know if we'll ever get there, dude.
Oh, man, you'll be surprised.
I one of my friends said like a 45 is possible. That's another conversation. I think it'd be crazy. Who knows? It's such a crazy sport.
But what I know for sure, when I came in this, I came overconfident, thinking Aaron sub 4 mile. Who is this Hunter guy? He's not gonna outrun me. Are you crazy? Plus, you know, I really come from a track background. I go to world championship, I watch, so I'm a runner in my mind. Then I went to LA, I'm with you, ski erg, everything is doing fine, I'm running. The minute I touch the sled, I say something is going, something is wrong. But then running after that, two different sports. To this day, I didn't master compromise running. There's such a gap between my running level right now and my compromised running level. I must be doing something around training, and I'm still experimenting.
Yeah. Dude, I will tell you, I've been doing this probably longer than anybody else has consistently at the high level. And I will tell you with 100% certainty, they've been making the sleds lighter every single year through some way, shape, or form, through whether the surface of the sled. Like, I'll give you one of the greatest examples. I think a lot of it has to do with the development over in Europe and versus over here. When they came here to do our event, World Championships in Vegas in 2022, all of the Europeans came over to compete against us, because the year before we were in Germany, the year before that we were in Germany, and they had their own equipment and their own sleds over there, independent of that side of the franchise or business, whatever you want to call it. They came over here and they had to remove a whole 55-pound plate off the sled, and we raced one plate down for World Championships that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and not a lot of people know that. And I can't even begin to tell you how much harder High Rocks used to be after the sled push. It was a freaking – and the sled bullet. It was like
the sled needs to be heavier, because now you can do well in High Rocks and look like a runner.
Yeah. I think they need to increase the weight back up again, because I remember, like, now when I do the sled push, I'm just like kind of like pulling it with my arms and stuff. I'm not that much stronger. I'm really not. And I'm being honest with you guys. I've gotten better at this sport as a whole, but I know after
years. Are you seeing, Hunter, are you pulling more with your arms, a bicep, as opposed to what you were doing, arms, biceps, and legs? And you had to use your legs in order to get that thing.
I had to use my legs and like drag it back, and you're like, ah, but now, dude, like you do that little extra hitch and the sled slides a little bit. That did not happen before. Like, it was like a fucking truck in the mud back in the day. It was definitely different. It was so different. And
well, I know in 2022, man, when we did the one in LA,
yeah,
I couldn't move it. It took me like 11 minutes.
That's okay, what I'm saying.
It was my first one. I agree, it was my first one, but still, I was heavy. I was probably 200 pounds at the time. Yeah. No, there's no way I could move that thing. No way. Yeah.
Dude, I know. I remember when I raced against you that day, and like you could feel it. You're like, fuck, this is a mission. And I hope so. Now they're making a partner with CenterFit, and they're going to change out all the material. Like, I hope to golly gosh that they make an adjustment, because when I saw those three guys race in Chicago, and they all just did under 2 minute sled push, and Paleo was able to be fourth in the race. Then all of a sudden he came over to Stockholm and there was just like a difference in material. And then all of a sudden he ended up in whatever place he was, but it was far slower. Like, you can just tell. And my worry is that this sport is going to, now they're going to switch the equipment out, and that is going to be such a noticeable difference. The times will drop even lower. So like I don't even know.
You think they're going to go away from Rogue Sled because
they already made the partnership.
Okay.
No, I don't think it's a Rogue problem. I think it's the carpet, no?
Part of it's the carpet.
The carpet don't even fold no more, which is good.
Yeah. Listen, I get it. I don't know what's going to end up happening. I think really we want to get away from this being such a runner sport and have like the unique dynamic of it.
You got to be big. You got to look like a big guy sports. Not the runner sports then.
Yeah, it will help sexify the sport. I think so. Yeah. What are some of your goals and ambitions this year? Because I think, interestingly enough, even though you haven't had the results that I think can substantiate your talent, you are part of a lot of the conversations I have at like dinner tables about the sport. Everyone's just like, oh, this, and this is happening. They're like, I wonder when Anas is going to do it. I wonder when Anas is going to clip off that like 55. I think a lot of people consider you to have an enormously high ceiling because of your running potential. Do you have any really big ambitions this year? Because you and I have sat down, you're like, well, I've got this going on. Like, is there anything you want to say publicly? Like, you know, I want this year. Like, I have a goal before I die to be in the Elite 15 at Worlds. Like, what would it might it be in this sport?
First thing, I need to qualify for Worlds.
Yeah.
If I do qualify for Worlds with the same routine that I have now, I train about 2.5 hours a day. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes I'll push it to 3 if I do double thresholds. When I train, I'm highly dedicated. The minute I step out of training, I can't be resting and do all these important stuff because I have the kids and we have work. We have so much stuff to do. If I qualify for World Championship, then I will literally take probably a month off before, or tremendously reduce my work time and go after the podium. I think that right now I am in 56 shape, not 55. I mean, in Chicago, I was already in 56 shape. I just raced myself. Stockholm, I was telling you, don't take Stockholm as a reference for me. Take Chicago. But yeah, I'm dedicated. Honestly, I'm really dedicated. I do think that I have what it takes to be in the top 3, top 4 consistently. Winning, you know, not yet. I realize that, you know, you got to be honest with yourself. So I will say by next year, probably going for consistent first, second place. And this year, I want to be a podium in the Worlds. I really don't think, and I don't want to be arrogant or anything, but I don't think there's 3 guys that can beat me. I look at what the other guys do. And I just think my problem right now is the compromise running. I have the strength, I have the running. Somehow the compromise running just, I don't know, it's not there yet.
Yeah. It's a complicated process. I mean, there's a lot of talent in this field. And, you know, right now, the thing that I look at the most is not people's ceiling. I look at their base, because there's a lot of these guys you see come out there and like run a really great time. They're like, I ran a 56. And the next time you see them, they run a 60. And then they run like a 57. And then they run like
for this year.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guys spend the whole summer training.
Yeah.
When I say that I took 7 weeks off, off to me means off, means nothing. So I started training late August, early September. Even though I was getting ready for Chicago, the goal is still to be in shape around March and mostly in June. Yeah. So it sucks because I'm not qualified for Worlds yet. But my peak in my mind, I'm already at Worlds. So I'm training.
DC, baby. DC.
Spot. Yeah.
Okay. Don't be lazy, dude. We can do a training camp DC.
I will be here. The only thing, my wife is due in February. So I have to keep that in mind.
Dude, you want that baby to come out and be like, my dad's a beast. That's what you need, dude. That's what you need.
No, what's killing me is not work, is the kids.
What's that?
What's killing me right now for training and not allowing me to train more is the kids.
Yeah, I get that.
We have three already. That's what really was getting me. But I need to set up everything at home. And once I have everything at home, I will be able to train 5 hours if I need to. It takes time, man, to ski and row every other day, for example. So when I go to the gym, I just sacrifice the ski and the row. I just don't do it.
Yeah. That's why you got to come up here to training camp, baby. I got it all set up.
He's got double the equipment on skiers and rowers up there.
Yeah.
Bikers.
It's nice. I got it all, baby. Ryan just got his own for Christmas. Yes. Got his own
Thank
skier.
You. Thank you.
Very, very Thank special you. Boy found a skier under the Christmas tree.
Yes.
Well, dude, we had an amazing time hanging out. If anybody hasn't heard about this, Arnaz and I are running doubles in Los Angeles this weekend. It wasn't my intention, but he and I kept on kind of poking each other, like, you want to do this? You want to do this? And then we did a workout on Monday. We're like, fuck it. We're doing it. So I'll be riding your ass hard. You drag the runs and I'll drag the stations and let's just beat the shit out of that time.
You better
High Rocks America and High Rocks World just made a post with your two faces on it where it's a men's doubles world record attempt. I don't know. I can't share this real quick, but I can put it up on the thing. World record attempt, Anas via Hunter, and they got your PB times.
Get your handsome face on there, bro. Let's just get this done. Let's get this done.
You just have to remind me to run smart. I get excited sometimes and just go crazy.
We'll make the whole game plan. All right, dude. Well, you know, that means we probably got to get there by like 7. So I'm going to leave here by... I'm going to
give you an official start time?
8 o'clock. Race at 8 o'clock.
Are you signed up?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Did they announce how many laps is going to be?
It's 2.5. It's the same thing like we did in Stockholm. It's like 2.25, 2.7, something like that, you know, because of the in and outs in different places. I'll go over the course with you, and I'll call you later. All right, guys, anybody who's checking in on what we're doing, watching the show, we just want to thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will do our best to make sure that there's some kind of live stream that you guys can watch through our Instagram and on Saturday. And if we find out, maybe we'll do a live stream type thing with Ryan doing the commentating. Other than that, guys, if you want the best products in the business, well-designed, great taste, and made by yours truly, guys, go check out Builder Sports or Builder International. You guys can get all of our products there. We sold out of Strength X2 because it's the number one strength product on the market for hybrid sports. Other than that, guys, if you're looking for good training, house training is where it's at. And if you guys are looking for content involved with all types of sports, our podcast, Here to Party Sports, is an umbrella company now. We're reaching out and trying to cover sports all over the place. So, honestly, this is just the start. We are going to be 10 times bigger by the end of this year than we were last year. We are super pumped to be providing this, and we're super pumped to have Anas on the show. I'm excited to learn more about you, dude, and get some great training leading up to DC so we can beat the shit out of those bitches this season, dude. LA does it best.
So you're going to DC?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to DC, dude, to shit on David Magida.
In his own town.
That's right, dude. You think I want to go to D.C.? I live in Malibu, all right? I don't need to leave this place.
There's nothing good in D.C. except
when it comes to fucking proven points, I will always show up, dude. I'm the first person in the boat.
Do you have a goal in mind? A time?
Probably, right, depending on the course, I'll probably like run a 52.30, 52.15. I'm going to hurt people.
Honestly, I didn't believe that you won record, when you were saying that you won world record pace in Stockholm. I was thinking, this guy's just trying to get in our head. He's lying.
Yeah. Dude, I did the workout in my gym at home, and I was just like, And I wrote it out. I was only 4 seconds off my time here at home than I was at the world record in Stockholm. We're dialed.
I need to come do that workout and see where I'm at.
Dude, we're dialed. We just sit there and we just sit there with pieces of paper. Because, you know, if you look over, like I have post-it notes all over the place on the wall looking at things, and we analyze constantly. And I'm just like, okay. And I get data, and I'm like, I'm not going to be the person who has any guesses. I'm just going to get shit done. I can put you in the same boat, dude. Let's do it this fucking week.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in here to Party Sports. Over and out. Anas, I'll be in touch, brother. Ryan, I'll hit you up.
Later.
See you, boys. Later.